Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering the letter. Enjoy the episode. All right, let's just go into it.
Why is this movie called The Letter?
Why is this movie called The Letter?
She writes a letter, right?
I don't know.
At the end?
Jeff, do you know how much I actually took into this movie?
She like writes a letter to her husband that reveals her schizophrenia, right? That's what happens?
You're looking at somebody with zero information. I might as well have not watched the movie. I might as well had just been asleep during the whole thing.
I locked into this movie.
You did?
I sat there and I did not look at my phone. I just looked at it. I watched
you
the screen.
You raw dogged the movie.
I watched the screen.
You raw dogged the movie.
Stuart, this may be the most groan-worthy movie I've ever watched in my life.
The most what?
Groan-worthy. Like, ugh.
Groan-worthy.
Yes. Where I'm just like, oh.
Oh, groan as in like, ugh. Okay. Yeah. Because I thought like groan, like grown adult. Like,
yeah,
what?
It's the most adult movie I've ever seen in my life. It's kind of a really, you know, expressive look at how, you know, the theater world is, you know, all internalized. And how
I want to vomit right now. Just that we have to talk about this movie. Because, hi, everybody. Welcome to Easy Riders. Thank you for listening last week to... Jeff is showing me a picture of the poster of the letter.
Yeah. One of the least existent movies we've ever talked about, right?
I wouldn't say least existent. I found it pretty easily.
No, I mean like least existent culture.
Oh, yeah. Like there's so many movies called The Letter. If I asked you, have you seen the movie The Letter? They'd be like, maybe. Who's in it? It'd be like, is that the one with Bette Davis and Herbert Marshall from 1940? No. How about The Scarlet Letter, 95, with Demi Moore and Gary Oldman? No. The Christmas Letter with Chevy Chase and Randy Quaid? No. The Love Letter, the 1998 movie with Jennifer Jason Leigh and Campbell Scott? No. The Love Letter, 1999, with Kate Capshaw, Tom Everett Scott? No. The Last Letter from Your Lover, 2021, with Shailene Woodley and Joe Alwyn? No. The Letter for the King, 2020 TV series with Amir Wilson, Ruby Ashbourne Circus?
No.
We're talking about The Letter, 2012, with Winona Ryder, Josh Hamilton, Maren Ireland, Catherine Watterson, James Franco,
yes,
and Lila Robbins. There's a few people in this movie. It came out in 2012. You've not heard of this movie.
It came out in a loose sense.
Came out in a very loose sense. How'd it come out?
Like,
it premiered in a festival, right? It
premiered at a festival.
Yeah.
And then it was probably like...
That means it got accepted into a festival. Yes. How do you feel about that?
I mean, sometimes like...
We've made movies. We submitted them to some festivals. Some of them have rejected them. This got in.
Yeah.
It's got into a festival.
Well, sometimes you know a guy.
Yeah.
So this movie is directed by Jay Anania. We had a dispute last week. You were correct. He is the head of NYU.
Sorry. I'm getting a FaceTime from Mark Tilly.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Okay. Put him on.
Oh, is that coming from my... Okay.
It's coming from another room.
Hi, Mark. Oh, sorry. It's okay. Are you coming over? Huh? Are you coming over?
I thought you were recording.
We are. But we're talking about The Letter. It's a bad movie. Have you seen The Letter?
What games are you going to play?
Well, I'll text you, but some fun games.
Oh, sorry I interrupted.
No, it's okay. Come over. Bring Rachel. Bye. All right.
Good cameo. The dead air right now is this movie is dead air, the movie. So much of this movie is just silent. That's like a problem with this, right? Stuart is... staring into the abyss.
You are too. You're just able to talk while you do it.
I'm good at that, right?
Yeah. This movie, how are we to describe this? Well, keep going with the context. Okay, it came out in a film festival.
So the director of this movie is Jay Anania, who's he's in charge of the directing program at NYU's Tisch Film School.
Yes.
And if this is what they're teaching the kids, God help us all.
I applied to go to that film school. I got rejected.
Yeah. And James Franco went to NYU's film school for directing.
Yes.
While he was an actor, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really connected with this directing professor, and he did a movie with him previously called Shadows and Lies. This is their second movie together, The Letter. And this is like kind of the beginning of James Franco's like artsy run. You remember that run?
What else was in his artsy run?
So I'm going to show you James Franco's career. So look at this. This is James Franco's filmography right here.
Okay.
You can see like...
Very quickly, he gets into Spider-Man.
There's Spider-Man. There's a bunch of like, you know, some indies, some like studio movies. Some of these you've heard of, some of these
Spider-Man
you haven't.
2, The Ape.
The Wicker Man. The Holiday.
Annapolis.
Knocked Up. He's doing like, you know, a lot of comedies. Yeah. But he's doing like 3 or 4 movies a year. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you get into like 2010, 2011, he goes to film school for directing. And suddenly...
What is he doing? Oh my God.
Folks, I went up to James Franco's filmography and he'll scroll. And once you hit 2013, things start really growing out of hand.
Yeah, he starts doing a lot.
James Franco just starts trying to position himself as like a quintessential arts guy. Starts directing all these William Faulkner adaptations, like The Sound and the Fury, Indubious Battle, et cetera, et cetera. I don't need to list them all. You don't care. He simultaneously is doing like Oz the Great and Powerful and like Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep.
But he's doing Spring Breakers.
Sausage Party.
Sausage Party, of course, one of the great independent films of the age.
Yeah.
Just 3 movies with Winona Ryder.
Why did you say it like that, Jeff?
Because we're gonna talk about it 3 times, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like, look at all these things. Like, have you heard? Yeah. Look at all these.
I'm looking at him. I'm looking at him.
He'll kind of just put himself. He's in one scene in Alien Covenant. He'll just kind of put himself into like independent films to get them financing, or he'll direct them, or he'll help you know, sponsor the creation of them. And then he gets Me Too'd and he takes 5 years off.
Yes.
He's coming back this year, Stuart. Do you know what movie he's coming back with?
What's he coming back with?
A movie that everybody's heard of called The Price of Money, A Largo Winch Adventure.
Oh.
He's like getting it. Now that he's like, we talked about it last week a little bit, but like he fled to France and is making independent films after he got canceled.
Yeah.
He is unfortunately not in Jean Dubarry.
Why'd you bring that up again?
Bring up Jean Dubarry.
Okay. Yeah. I can't ever say I was like big into James Franco.
Yeah.
I never really like, but also like who's out there like screaming James Franco's praises, even disregard the cancellation bit. Well, like
James Franco comes into the scene and he plays, James Dean. Pretty early in his career. Can't remember what that project is called, but he plays James Dean pretty quick in... Oh, yeah, just a movie called James Dean, just a television film. Yeah. And that's kind of what his like position early in his career is. He's like a new James Dean. He's like a bad boy of Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, he gets cast in Spider-Man pretty quick off of that heat from James Dean as Harry Osborn. Kind of set up as, you know, he's like the bad boy to Peter's nerdy all-Americanisms.
Yeah.
And then he just, throughout his career, you know, he's trying out different things. He gets into the Judd Apatow comedy realm, does a lot of movies with your Seth Rogens and Danny McBride. And I think he just kind of builds this like, bad boy reputation. And he is generally well-liked. He's generally good, I would say, in a lot of this early stuff. How do you feel about him at this time?
Well, I remember, like, it was, like, he was Harry Osborn, and then he was in Pineapple Express and adjacent movies like that.
He's good. He's funny in Pineapple Express.
And then he
pops up in Milk.
127 Hours did something for him.
He is fantastic in that movie.
Yes, he is.
He's fantastic in that movie. He gets an Oscar nomination.
Yes.
You know what also happens at that Oscars?
What?
He hosts it with Anne Hathaway.
He hosts it with Anne Hathaway?
Anne Hathaway hosts the Oscars.
I do not remember that.
And here's Here's a great example of the Hollywood sexism we've been talking about through Winona's career.
Yeah.
He is wooden as a fucking block that whole Oscar ceremony. He is so bad. Anne Hathaway overcompensates because he's like not giving anything.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, Anne Hathaway was so try hard during that.
Really?
That's what happens right after that.
Oh man.
It's like a disaster. The two are, like, it is not a good host.
That's not fair. But I remember him being good in 127 Hours. Yeah. And
but I think the Oscars kind of like, he, even though he gets the heat off of 127 Hours, I think people walk away from that ceremony and they're kind of just like, oh, that guy. We don't need that guy.
I mean, he's still like, he does Your Highness with Natalie Portman.
Yeah, he does Your Highness.
Then Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And I think Rise of the Planet of the Apes was like the last. I mean, then there's Oz, the Great and Powerful.
Yeah. But there's like Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Like, that's not. good. Yeah, good. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, like, that movie's really good. Is the thing about that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember like the buzz about that movie? The trailers?
No.
The trailers were bad. And people were just like, God, this is going to be a mess.
And then it was good.
And then it was good. Yeah. The shock of it.
And then it was good. And it made three amazing sequels.
It's like James Franco's not pop. Like, he's not getting at this point the big blockbusters where like you'd expect someone of his relative caliber to be. He just got an Oscar nomination.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's an Oz the Great. It's a prequel to The Wizard of Oz directed by Sam Raimi, who's putting him in because he liked working with him on Spider-Man.
Yeah, 2011 was Rise, and then 2013 Oz. So I guess there wasn't. He's doing a lot of stuff in between. I'm skipping a lot of stuff.
And then he's like, just doing a lot of like these indie films that he's connected with, which is, it's fine. It's good that he's like putting himself into that realm.
This is the end.
He seems much more interested in doing that stuff than doing big blockbuster. But it's like, this is the end.
The interview.
He does the interview.
I Am Michael. Have you seen I Am Michael?
I've not seen I Am Michael.
Do you know like the kind of the tragedy of that movie?
No.
It's about a gay man essentially going to conversion therapy and then becoming a anti, like, I don't know. There was a lot of bad press on that movie, I Am Michael. But it was weird because it was made by like it was like when two wokeness went a little reverse, caved in on itself.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll get into it later, but like, and then I'm just looking for
terms of like big, because like he voices Sausage Party, but then he decides he wants to start directing. And so he just starts directing all these William Faulkner adaptations.
Yeah.
And then he decides he's going to direct two big Hollywood stories, a book called Zeroville. Or an adaptation of a book called Zeroville that has been said by many to be like unadaptable.
Uh-huh.
And The Disaster Artist.
Disaster Artist?
Yes.
Good movie.
And so he directs The Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
Which becomes a big sensation.
It's great. It's a good movie.
People really like that movie. He wins Best Actor at the Golden Globes for that.
Yeah.
And it seems like, oh, well, James Franco's on a glide path to an Oscar nomination.
Do you know
the
bit with that, though? Because he won the Golden Globe and he invited Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, Tommy Wiseau went up with him.
And Tommy Wiseau was about to say something to the mic and James Franco cut him off before he could say anything. Yeah. Firestorm at that Golden Globe ceremony.
But, and it seems like he's on a glide path to an Oscar nomination for The Disaster Artist. And he directed something that people like.
I remember The Disaster Artist was like, is James Franco starting to become Oscar?
Is James Franco like back again?
Yeah.
Is he now like, okay, he's going to like do bigger or more studio movies again?
Yeah.
Aside from his comedies. And he's in Alien Covenant for a scene.
A scene.
And then he gets a Me Too'd in between the Golden Globe ceremony and the Oscars.
What was his Me Too bit? I apologize to the audience that I've not
texting been underage girls.
That's right. Yes. That's, I was like, which one was he? Okay, yeah. I do remember that.
And so he texted underage girls and it was pretty clear cut.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. Now as you're saying it, I remember that.
It wasn't a gray area one. It was like, he's texting underage girls. That's acceptable.
Not acceptable. Yeah.
And so he doesn't get the Oscar nomination. He kind of gets shafted to the side. And then the next year is just movies that he is had already filmed come out, including The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the last Coen Brothers joint movie.
Mm-hmm.
His movie Zeroville eventually just gets released to like no fanfare. And then he doesn't work for 5 years until he comes back this year with The Price of Money, A Largo Winch Adventure.
His IMDb says he's got a lot in the, like,
yeah, it would, wouldn't it? He's right. He's one of those guys who just goes around and says a lot of stuff.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's so true.
You're probably playing Fidel Castro in a movie. Sounds good. Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's cast him as Fidel Castro.
No, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No.
I see no issues.
The policeman. Kill the czar. Bunny man.
The long home. Anyway.
Man. Anyway.
That's all to say that James Franco has a very weird career.
But this is 2012, The Letter. Yeah.
This is when we're picking up with him truly in like the height or like the depth or the height, however we want to call it, of like his like
indie.
I'm in the indie art sphere. Like we're making art.
We're making art, bro.
And his professor, you know, directing, is just like, I'm going to make this movie called The Letter.
And they get Winona like starring in it.
Yeah,
full run of the movie.
I'm not quite sure how like she gets involved in this. The thing is, there's no real press about this movie. So there's not really any evidence about how Winona gets involved. I'm sure they just like reached out to her with like a leading role. And James Franco was attached and he's like, hey, you should come do this. And she's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, sure.
I'm trying to think, like, did he like give her like a connection to get into another movie, because isn't James Franco also an Iceman?
Well, they're both in the Iceman and Homefront.
I just wonder like if that's like, hey, if you do this, I can put in a good word for you somewhere else. Like that happens.
Yeah, when is the Iceman?
Technically it says it was released before The Letter, but I don't know how much. Like The Letter could have been shot in 2 days.
Okay, so that's actually realistically probably what happens is they film the Iceman together and he just brings her right into this.
Yeah.
I didn't clock that the Iceman.
And they also did Homefront together, which you could say that
they do Homefront next.
Well, the only reason I say that is because Homefront probably has a little bit longer of a post-production process because it has more effects and stuff in it. I don't know. I'm probably bullshitting, but
I would bet that it's they film the Iceman.
They get signed on to Homefront together, and then maybe like...
Yeah, and then they do this in between.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just kind of do a run of the three of them together.
Yeah. That seems reasonable.
That seems exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure like on the set of the Iceman, Frank is like, I'm working on this indie thing. It's coming up. You want to be part of it? She's like, yeah, sure.
We're going to shoot
I'll read the letter.
We're going to shoot for like 15 days in New York.
Yeah, this is definitely like a 10-day shoot.
Yeah. Oh my God. Absolutely.
Extremely 10-day shoot energy in here.
Yeah.
You know, circling back to Winona, because we kind of come to her naturally and how she gets involved in this. We are picking up at like a fun point in her career.
Fun.
Yeah. No, where it's like, this is the first lead role we've had from her in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Since I would say, I think When Love Is Not Enough, do you think she's the lead in that?
Oh. Oh.
Is otherwise
the last lead role she's been in?
Because otherwise it would be like The Last Word. Because like she's in the middle of a career stabilization. You know, at some points
honestly,
I've said career.
I would say The Last Word. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
At some points I've said career resurgence. I think this is more of a career stabilization. She's in the midst of that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And so like she's at like a cruising altitude, with a lot of these movies post Star Trek, post Black Swan.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is the first time she's had a lead role since this. Just kind of stabilization started. And I'm sure, you know, it's like a 10-day shoot with a friend. Franco probably sold her on it. It's on face value, probably interesting material to delve into. If I were to tell you about this movie.
He must be a really good pitcher.
James Franco, by all counts, is.
Yeah.
But, like, you look at this, and it's kind of just what if she was the lead in Black Swan? Is kind of what this movie's going
for. Yeah, basically, yeah.
To the extent they name one of the characters Beth McIntyre.
Yeah.
It's like she's a playwright and a play director, and she's kind of losing her mind, separating the reality
and
from what's happening in the play.
This play.
And that's about all I
it
got.
It feels very much like a film student
It's the most film student-ass movie I've ever seen in my life.
It's the most like, yeah, film student who saw Black Swan said, I can do that, but better.
And they could not. I'm sorry.
They could not.
Simply could not.
I saw IMDb. They had a approximate budget of $10 million. And I have to ask,
where did it go?
Where did it go?
No, this definitely was shot for $5,000.
This was definitely shot for five potatoes.
Yeah, the crafty budget was a box of Welch's for snacks.
Could they afford Welch's? Yeah.
I think they went with like the Target brand.
No, they got Mott's.
Mott's.
Oh, sorry.
I would call this, I wrote down in my notes, I wrote, this is somnambulant cinema. This is like a movie you're watching and your eyes just are like.
This is Star Trek the motion picture, but worse.
Star Trek the motion picture is like a good, like, you're like.
Jeff is smiling but falling asleep.
Yeah. There's a clear
difference between falling asleep with a frown and falling asleep with a smile.
It's like. There are, if it's like, I don't fall asleep watching things. That's not something I do. There are, there were three times I've like kind of intentionally put on movie on so that I could fall asleep to. I find it hard to fall asleep during a movie because I'm so locked in.
Yeah.
Like I just want to watch the movie. And if I fall asleep during it, I'd be like, oh, I miss stuff.
Don't you know the gimmick of like, if you ever want. If your girlfriend's really tired and she needs to like take a nap or something, the easiest way to do it is like, I need you to watch this movie I really love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then she just passes out right away. Yeah.
But no, like the three movies that I can like put on and like, it's Blade Runner, it's Star Trek the Motion Picture, and it's the first Terminator.
First Terminator.
The first Terminator.
So slow. Yeah, you're right.
The first Terminator, a perfect movie. But the first Terminator is also like, it's like you put it on, the whole score is a synth track.
Yeah.
It's like kind of slow paced. It's the perfect like vibe where your body just feels good. Your body just relaxes. The tension goes out. Your eyes are kind of closing. And you're hearing like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you wake up and it's like the main menu.
Yeah.
And playing on a repeat, and you're like, you gotta turn the TV off real quick.
For me, it's The Fox and the Hound.
Yeah.
I fall asleep during The Fox and the Hound.
The thing about this movie, though, this movie falls asleep and you're just fucking angry. Like, wake up and you're like, God damn it.
Well,
now like, I gotta rewind.
Like, this is gonna be a short episode because, like, the plot, you just said what the plot is.
Yes.
She's directing a play.
Yes.
A play about what?
I don't know.
Don't know.
Infidelity, maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe, I think, questionably.
James Franco is an actor in this play who doesn't care about the play. How's he playing this? What's he doing?
Yeah.
I don't even know what the choices are being made here.
I have no idea. This is the thing.
It's a lot of Winona over voiceover.
Most of, I would say 50% of this movie is like just shots of people like staring and then you hear Winona narrating about copper or something. Right?
Yeah.
She's just like, copper, if you take too much of it, it'll give you schizophrenia. And I'm like, what? What are we talking about?
Yes, and she asks a guy, like, are you poisoning me?
Yeah, and he's like, no.
But I don't mind if you look through my stuff.
Yeah. And then it turns out she is schizophrenic because she got dusted on the street by some random guy, right?
Yeah, what was with that? She was screaming at some Asian man.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
How could you not know?
Because the movie doesn't tell you. folks, Stuart and I have had movies that we've struggled to comprehend before. This is a movie where the filmmaking does not work on such a base level that I don't know what the story is or what's happening in this movie.
We've all been film students before.
Yeah.
And we've all, like, tried to make our weird movie.
Art film, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like even some of the weirdest art films I've seen in class, I at least like, I get it a little.
Yeah, you get like what the idea is at minimum.
At minimum, you get the idea. You get it that it doesn't work. You get that the idea doesn't work, but you get that there was an idea.
I
don't know what the idea is.
I sat there in directing one class while a kid put up on a screen a static shot of himself looking in the camera, tinted blue with a song called Alcoholic Blues put over it. And you know what? I get it. Is it good? It sucks. It's clearly like he had like had 5 minutes before class. He's like, shit, I didn't make my movie. And that's what he submitted. But I get it. I get the idea. You're blue. You're sad. You're an alcoholic blues. Sure. It all makes sense.
But it's bad.
Yeah, but it's terrible.
But you got the idea.
The letter isn't bad, but I actually don't know what is happening.
Yeah.
I'm watching this movie actively, and here's the best I can parse. Is she is directing this play. James Franco shows up as a new actor in the play named Tyrone. There's her husband is one of the actors as well. She starts suspecting that her husband's cheating on her.
Did not know her husband. That was her husband.
Yeah, her husband's cheating on her with one of the other women in the play. And so she starts like rewriting the play to like try and catch her husband's infidelity. But
is that what she was? So she was rewriting the play.
I think that's what happens. The whole time James Franco keeps just like walking in and being like,
and for the audience, like, what Jeff is doing is like he's doing like a almost kind of like a stoner face where you're not really paying attention anymore.
And like maybe James Franco is also trying to like have an affair with Winona
because he's trying to have an affair with other actors on the show.
Yeah, but then she like meets up with a reporter.
I don't remember this whatsoever.
For like an article, and then she leaves, and the reporter gets hit by a car
that she had a vision of earlier.
Yeah, she had a vision. And the cops come and are like, did you talk to this woman? She's like, yes. And they're like, do you recognize this voice? And Stuart, I don't know whose voice it's supposed to be.
Well, for a moment, I thought, is that Winona's voice? Because my
it's a guy going, shit, he rams the car into her.
Well, then my thought was like, is it Winona hallucinating and being the one to hit her with the car?
Maybe. But, and then she's like, but then oh my it God, wasn't. Someone's dead. And then she gets a call from the dead person the next day.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't get hit by a car. And I was like, oh, I'm imagining everything. Oh, my God.
Do you live in a coconut tree?
No, she exists in the context of all that came before her. remember when Cole got mad at me because I messed that up on the Pippa Lee episode?
I do. Remember when Joe Biden dropped out during that episode?
Yeah, it was a good episode. It was a good time.
It was a great time.
But then, like, Winona starts accusing her husband of having a bunch of copper in his backpack.
Oh.
And there's like narration over it where she's just like, copper can give you schizophrenia, but it's an essential mineral. And I'm like, what the fuck is are we talking about?
I don't get it.
And her husband's like, I don't have copper in my backpack, but you can look through, and she looks through and there's no copper in there. Because there wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because she's the one who's taking the fucking copper.
Yeah.
And she's being dosed by random people on the street.
Yeah.
And then like she freaks out at a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it just cuts to her in a mental institution.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband's like talking with the doctor and they're like, yeah, copper poisoning can really mess you up. And when you combine it with morphine, it causes a big problem. And she got dosed with morphine. And then she hands a letter off. The last thing she does.
You got more in this movie than I did.
The last thing she does before she goes into the institution, she hands a letter off to her husband. It's of like about copper and like, you know, she's losing her mind. I can't remember what the fuck is in the letter.
I don't even remember her going in the institution.
Yeah, but then she's in an institution at the end and her husband's there and the movie ends.
That's the letter.
That's the letter, right?
It's a really bad.
Thank you so much for listening.
Well, I mean, for real, what did this movie?
Whoa. Jesus Christ. Save that for the cook. Oh, we got to be sparing. It's a good bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like this, I don't even know. Like this movie's like it's Black Swan, but with a director, but bad,
but not. Comprehensible.
I would have fucking respect for a director. Like you know how when you go into pitches, like they sometimes want to hear like it's this meets this. It's what if we did The Bear, but through the lens of John Wick. And they're all assassins. Like, that's a pitch you can walk into.
Yeah.
And hit a studio with. That's how they kind of want to hear it.
Yeah.
Imagine having the fucking cojones to walk in and be like, all right, it's Black Swan, but bad.
That's what
like,
it
imagine
is.
Imagine that shit.
Yeah.
Like, if I were an executive, I'd say, give this man $10,000.
We were just talking about student films. And, like, there was a person in one of my classes at film school who made basically a complete ripoff of Black Swan. I think they even called it White Swan.
That's cool as hell. That's cool as hell to call it White Swan.
I think one of my buddies might have actually worked on it, but maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. But it was like almost verbatim Black Swan, but like a 10-minute short film. Here's the crazy part. It was good.
It was good.
Because it was one of our assignments where you had to make a movie with like three lines or less of dialogue. So it had like almost virtually no dialogue in the entire movie. It's all told non-verbally. It's actually pretty good. And like, that's the thing. It's like, all art is basically derivative. This could have been like a Black Swan, but a theater director. But good. But I shouldn't say but good, because Black Swan is good. But you know, you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
So, Stuart,
this movie's just incomprehensible.
I went to a charity film festival earlier this year.
That's great.
It's Patrick Lives On Festival. You yes. and I have attended before.
Yeah, I've had a film screen in that festival.
You have. Yeah. This year, someone submitted the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I just want to shout this out. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So it was a film festival. You're watching like all these like little indie films, right? And someone submitted a 22-minute long Unreal Engine animated silent movie about an astronaut stuck in a spaceship. And you just have all these like 60-year-old like charity mongers just sitting in this fucking room in their little chairs, staring at this projector that's blasting just like this like Unreal Engine like video game Gears of War looking ass astronaut just flying silently between the parts of a spaceship just fixing it. The coolest shit anyone's ever done in their entire life. All these people just look so lost and fucking confused by what's happening on the screen. It was so cool.
That's amazing.
Anyway, all that being said,
let's wrap this up.
Yeah, I think that's all we like.
Dead ass. I have nothing to say about Jason this movie. And it's so terrible.
Jason and Jay Anania, head of the directing program together at NYU Tisch Film School.
I'm glad I didn't go there.
Quit. Quit your job.
A shout out to like any film students who go to Tisch. Like, is this person like still a teacher there? If they were, were you one of their class members? Were they a good teacher? Did they have good things to say?
I'd be curious.
Because
the work is not matching the status.
I have a story of one of my professors to tell you off the air.
Oh, God.
You may have actually heard of it, but yeah. Like, I got to tell you the story off the air.
Yeah.
I can't say it on the air.
The last thing I want to say, like, this movie just doesn't work on a fundamental level. It doesn't make sense. It's incomprehensible. Yeah. I don't know who anyone in this movie is.
It's shot grotesquely. Yes.
It looks like
it was shot on a camcorder?
A potato.
Potato camcorder with overhead fluorescent lighting that just looked very grotesque. I think they may have had a tripod. I'm 80% sure.
You know what
sure.
The part I liked is?
What?
When there's like this artistic shot of some birds flying from like a basketball court up into the sky, and the camera, like you can see it stopping down. Like there's like gradient stopping down as it goes into the sky, and you can say, doot, doot, doot.
Oh my God.
You can like see the things happening.
That's amazing. You know, Jay was also this DP of the movie.
Of course he was.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to say about this movie is Catherine Waterston is in it.
Yeah.
Who was an actress. No. I spent the first 30 minutes of the movie convinced she was hired as a background extra because she did not have a single line. Did you catch this?
I don't know.
They keep being like, that's Julie. And she doesn't say anything. It's just like a silence from Catherine Waterston just sitting in the corner. I'm like, Are they paying her like extra scale for this? Like she's not getting paid as an actress? Is that what's? And then she finally pipes up 30 minutes. I'm like, okay, Catherine Waterston got paid. We're all good.
Yeah,
we're fine.
Yeah.
Daniels from Alien Covenant is okay. Stuart is playing with a cat rather than discuss this movie. That's where we're at right
more
now.
More entertaining.
Yeah. A disastrous movie. One of the worst things we've talked about on this show. One of them, definitely the least comprehensible. That Brendan Fraser movie that made me lose faith in humanity at least had, you know, was comprehensible.
Yeah.
What was that movie called? Harebrained. I hated that. That was so bad.
That at least had a plot.
That had ideas.
That had ideas. It had a plot. I could follow it.
Yes.
This is worse.
Yes.
0 out of 10.
Yeah, 1 out of 10. 0 out of 10 is a foul place to be.
What, Jeff? What gives it a one?
What gives it a one?
What gives it a one?
Do I have any like? It's the fact that Winona Ryder is like trying at least in this movie. That's what gives it a one. I have seen things you people wouldn't believe. that get the zeros.
What's a zero?
Let me look what the lowest rated movie I've ever watched is. Oh yeah, it's this fucking thing.
Oh, the Pinocchio with
Pauly Shore.
Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
Father, why won't you let me go there and be on my own?
It's this fucking thing. Sinbad Beyond the Veil of Mists.
This is Sinbad Beyond the Veil of Mist level.
Yeah.
It is.
It's Sinbad Beyond the Veil of Mist level, probably.
So it's a zero.
Fine. White Man's Burden is pretty low. Anyway.
Is White Man's Burden a zero for you?
No, White Man's Burden's a one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about the
Pawn Shop Chronicles made more sense than this.
Yeah, Pawn Shop Chronicles had a good first act. We've talked about this. We all agreed. Look, once it started getting into Confederate stuff and sex trafficking, it kind of lost its way. But it's kind of good until that point.
Elijah Wood has sex slaves.
Yeah, Elijah Wood has sex slaves and Frodo Baggins. More like Frodo, get the bag in. I don't know.
All right. Thank you all for listening. You can find us on Apple Podcasts.
Winona
Google
Ryder,
Podcast, Spotify,
thankfully, quickly
YouTube,
recovers with us with her Amazon second Music. Of three James Franco movies in The Iceman, which you can listen to next week.
You can
find
us at TravoltingPod.
We'll have a resident scion of New Jersey himself here to talk about the New Jersey set, The Iceman.
That's great. I'm excited for that. I'm excited for The Iceman.
Yeah. The Iceman. Do you know it's three James Francos back to back to back?
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Nuts.
We're just going to be so sick of talking about it.
Wild.
Stuart, we're just going to have to rewatch the opening of Alien Covenant.
Hey, Jeff, yeah. I'm going to be very frank with you.
Yeah.
Close out the podcast.
Remember the opening of Alien Covenant where there's just like a guy and he's burning to death in a little pod. He's like, and you're like, oh, that sucks for that guy. And
goodbye,
then they watch a little iPad and it's James Franco and you're like, hell yeah.